This is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today we have with us in the studio Port Townsend resident Nancy Leonard. Having completed 8 full-sized manuscripts over a 5-year period, Nancy Leonard is focusing on getting the series published. Minor characters took on a life of their own, she reports. I loved them, ached with them, pushed them on, and told their stories too. In the process of writing the series, I discovered the glory of northern Montana and the friendship and encouragement of Blackfeet Native American friends. Several Blackfeet are editing and helping me develop realism and authenticity of their modern-day points of view and cultural backgrounds. It has been one of the great privileges of my life to be accepted into their world and to experience one of the most glorious places on the planet. She adds that she has rekindled an interest in acoustic guitar and now plays a mixture of folk rock blues music. She frequently travels from her home in Port Townsend to Seattle to see her favorite rock groups and singer-songwriters. Many of her favorites are mentioned throughout her novels. In the process of researching a character who is a pilot, she started taking flying lessons. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, thank you very much, Sheila.
I'm very interested to talk to you about your series, about your approach to writing and publishing. But reading your bio, I definitely want to start by asking you about why your stories and characters are based in Montana and your connection to the Blackfeet.
When I write these books, it's a great opportunity to accentuate all my interests that I've developed over a very long life. I'm going to be 70 this summer. I've been passionately interested in a lot of things. Native American culture and history is one of them. So I knew, well, I actually didn't know when I very first started, but it just became apparent that it would add depth to the novels if I added Native American characters, especially depending on the location that the books are settled. So I took it upon myself to try to cultivate some Blackfeet that I could talk to, and was really amazingly successful. One of the Blackfeet, her name is Margie Yellow Kidney, has been my editor for 5 or 6 of the books. And what she does, I have other editors, but what she does is go through the books so that I have appropriate language and, even more important, their points of view that are accurately recorded in the books.
You were a writer before you started the series, or the series made you a writer?
The series made me a writer. I have not written anything professionally, nor did I ever want to write a novel in my life. It sounded like a lot of work. But at some point when you retire, you start trying different things out. I loved literature. I've read literature. I was a lit minor in college. It's been many, many years. But one day, fairly typical story, I had an idea. So I thought I would sit down at the computer and just record it. I figured it would take 20 minutes. I hardly got up until I was done with the 3rd manuscript. It took over my life. It was like ultimate creativity. It's just been a joy.
What was the idea, the initial idea that made you sit down?
My husband has a military career. He retired military, and I've met a lot of the people in his unit. He was a medevac pilot in Vietnam. The military world was outside my life. And when I met some of his fellow military friends, they operate on a little bit different scale or perspective than other people. Extreme loyalty to each other despite faults, continual encouragement. These types of things were central to what I decided I wanted to put in the books. So I had a basic idea of 2 brothers who were part of a military family whose father was killed when they were very small, and the difficulties that they went through as a result. And that was the initial impetus.
And how did Montana become part of this?
Well, if I didn't live in Port Townsend, I'd live in Montana. I love hiking and mountains and that open area, even the grasslands, and then Glacier National Park, that whole area. It's so beautiful that I thought, if I'm going to write books, why not put them there?
And then you could take a lot of trips to Montana for research.
I've dragged my husband on many.
So is it after deciding Montana would be the setting that you began meeting the Blackfeet?
I remember the day very, very early on in the first book where I literally flipped a coin on whether I needed a train location, somewhere on the Amtrak tract. And I literally flipped the coin between eastern and western Montana, and it came out eastern Montana and Glacier National Park. And that is how it fell into it. And I did not have significant Blackfeet characters until well into the second book. They took over like a lot of my characters did.
This is a fascinating story. What's also fascinating to me is your approach. When I read your bio at home, I read it a few times, that opening. Having completed 8 full-sized manuscripts over a 5-year period, Port Townsend resident Nancy Leonard is focusing on getting the series published. I think that a lot of writers would not write so many books before they attempted publication. They would want to see the first one out. How did you wait? What happened?
After the first book, this is a funny story, I literally took the manuscript down to Anna Quinn and said, okay, world, here I am.
And that's Anna Quinn at the Writer's Workshop here in town.
Absolutely. I thought they would kiss my feet, be delighted that I had finished a book, and Anna would just tell me where to send it. Well, I quickly found out it wasn't that easy, to put it mildly. But the more I learned about the value of editing, and I love editing almost as much as I love writing the original books, and I love working with editors. I always have. But the characters in the first book, Anna at one point said, you know, your other main character is really fascinating. You really should go on with the story. So a sort of secondary character became the focus of the second book. And then it happened again. A relatively minor character, I just had to tell his story. And so he became the lead character, the protagonist, in the third book. And this kept happening to me, that I would have minor characters that just seemed so interesting that I would continue writing. And to tell you the truth, my books, even though they're sequenced in 8 books, they're almost like the old-fashioned books like Gone with the Wind or Hawaii that keep going and going and going. It's just that my books are in volumes, individual volumes.
Which is good for today's market.
I never even thought of that, but yes, most people, a lot of people today, don't want to sit down and read a 1,000-page novel.
And those books are actually heavy. One of the things I became aware of with books that are very long is that they don't quite fit in your backpack so well, or your purse, or your, they're just heavy. So I think that keeping an audience going interested is what publishers are after, and it sounds like a good idea. So eventually you did find a publisher for the first 2. How did you do that?
If you know anything about book publishing, traditionally you start out sending query letters, and then you get a million rejections. It's very, very difficult. Very difficult. A friend of mine in town, Terry Passan, suggested that I submit my first manuscript to his publisher. He thought they might be interested, and they were. And I was just delighted. They picked up the second book and probably would have published all of them, but the competition in the publishing world has gotten dog-eat-dog also. And this fairly large publishing firm went under, taking something like 500 or 600 authors with them. I then started searching and then was fortunate enough to find another publisher. I've been extremely fortunate, extremely fortunate.
So persistence. Have to persist with your book, have to persist with the editing, and then you have to persist with the publishing venture, whichever way you choose to publish. If you're looking for a publisher, even if you're self-publishing, the work is time-consuming, and we become very hopeful that our book will see the light of day to other people, so it keeps us going, right?
Of all the things I've learned about writing is that it's an emotional journey, and it's like a roller coaster. I have a very even, optimistic personality, but the upheavals of publishing get really excited and everything's going to go really well, and then something horrible happens and then you have to start over. I don't even like the word tough-skinned because none of us writers are tough-skinned, really. Underneath, we're vulnerable to the world's market, the way things move, and you just have to deal with it. It's the one down on writing. Everything else has been gloriously wonderful, but perseverance, you just have to have confidence in yourself and keep going.
It's a good lesson. One thing, as you're talking, I'm thinking that whole journey is something like a book, because if our characters didn't have obstacles to overcome, there would be no story. Our writing life has that kind of story as well as our characters. So tell us a little bit about the book and maybe an excerpt from one of them.
Okay. As we've been talking about, the books are set in Montana. But just to give you an overview of how far these books go, I have, as I said, various passions, things that I'm interested in. One of the books goes so far afield as to talk about the difficulties in Iran and a rescue that goes on to spirit someone out of the country. I'm interested in prison reform, and so several of my books have characters that were incarcerated as very young people and needed a second chance, so I go into some of those areas. My format gives me an opportunity to go in a variety of directions, but they're very deeply character-driven, and they're also deeply plot-driven, and they're also really multi-genre. They're not a thriller. They're not a suspense. They're not a mystery. They're all of those things. Even my publishers, we grapple with it. It's called multi-genre, and that's actually pretty popular right now, but it was an accident. It just happened.
What was your career? I'm just interested because I'm wondering if what you did before you retired has an influence on your books.
No. I spent 37 years being a physical therapist.
Ah, interesting.
And had a very scientific career. I majored in biology in college and went to Northwestern for physical therapy training a long time ago. I loved the science elements, but there was this whole creative side in there. At least this is a very different kind of creativity, but it's been wonderful. Yeah.
Do you sometimes feel like you're channeling these characters, like they're beings?
Oh, they're all me. Yeah. One thing that's really unusual, I think, men seem to like my book as much as women do. And one of the reasons is that there's a fair amount of action, but for some reason, I seem to be able to get inside men's heads and think the way they do. And I've always had a great respect for the differences between men and women. And that comes out in my books. I enjoy the way men think. I enjoy the way they contribute. And their trials and successes and failures are in some way different than women's. And those are reflected in the books, too.
If you just joined us on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, you are listening to In Conversation, discussions on writing and the writing life with Sheila Bender. Today, Sheila is talking with Port Townsend resident Nancy Leonard about writing and publishing her 8-book Relentless River novel series.
Is it time for us to hear something?
I'm going to read an excerpt from the first book. The basic way to get to this part of the book is that these two brothers have had a horrible falling out. It involves their mother being actually killed. Around that incident, the brothers are horribly, horribly estranged. So the one brother decides that in order to get back at his other brother, who is seemingly succeeding where he's floundering, is to kidnap his girlfriend. So that's where we come in. This has not gone well for the kidnapper. He's basically floundering around with, what the heck am I doing? And this young lady escapes, and her life is threatened, and she escapes into the desert and may die. This is where we take the story to start. It's in the desert near Reno, Nevada, and this is from the young lady's point of view. Her name is Cora, and Sam is the struggling younger brother. Someone's arms are around me. I panic. I don't know where I am or who this is. I scream. I hear someone saying over and over, "Thank God, thank God." A man kneels beside me in the dust, offering a bottle of water. I grab for it and start gulping. After I drink half the bottle, he pulls it away. "Take it easy," he says. "Just sips now." "It's so hot," I manage. "I know," he says. I begin to know who he is, where I am. I sip more water. He's shielding me from the sun with his body. I focus on his face. He seems glad to find me. He doesn't look like he's going to hit me. It comes to me that he's probably saved my life. I'm grateful. "Can you walk if I help you?" he yells. The hot wind is a roar, making it hard to hear. "I don't think so," I point to my extremely swollen ankle. "I think I can carry you. The car is close." With some difficulty, I'm gathered up in his arms, and he makes his way to the car, walking carefully over the rough ground. I'm so glad to be alive. I start gasping, leaning on his shoulder. It's several minutes before he's unloading me at the house. I try hopping on my own, but it's almost impossible. So he puts his arm around my shoulders and half carries me inside. I'm awkwardly lowered onto a settee by the door in the wonderful coolness of the house. We both pant, trying to get our breath. I look down at my hands for several minutes. I'm sorry. When I look up, he's glaring at me. That was a stupid thing to do, he growls. I look back down at my hands, but he grabs my shoulders and shakes them roughly. You're hurting me, I protest. Are you crazy? He roars. It's 120 degrees out there. It was just dumb luck I found you. He's almost screaming. You could have died. You were almost invisible in the dust. Don't do that again. Okay, I won't. I snap back. I'm at my wit's end. I don't understand anything. He seems angry that I put myself at risk. Nothing makes sense, and I'm getting mad too. I'm going through hell, and at least I want to know why. You want to try another shower? He says with evident sarcasm, glowering at me. I sigh indignantly and try not to glare back at him. He helps me hobble to the shower, gives me a towel to partially hide myself, and helps me take my clothes off. He unties my filthy shoes and pulls roughly on my jeans. After all I've been through, it hardly bothers me. I'm so sandy that I don't even feel naked, and I'm angry. He hands me some soap and a washcloth. Don't try anything, he says threateningly. I risk giving him a look. What the hell could I try? I stand leaning against the wall of the shower and let the water cascade endlessly over my head while I try to think. As the anger wears off, the fear starts returning. Should I be terrified? Should I try to think about trying to kill him? He probably did just save my life. At last, I grab the shampoo and start scrubbing the dirt out of my hair. It takes several attempts with periodic rest to get most of the sand rinsed away. I finish without passing out, but it's close. I had to keep the water cool because of my sunburn. Even the pressure of the water hurts my bare skin, and my ankle throbs when I move it. I know I'm seriously hydrated, but I'll be damned if I'm going to ask for help. He throws a robe in my general direction, surprisingly averting his eyes, and I put it on. With his help, I limp the short distance to the bed and set inches from the bathroom door. He has a fast shower, constantly glancing out to see if I'm still here. I don't move a muscle. He wraps a white towel around his waist and walks over toward me. This is it. I feel the blood drain from my head and I glance quickly up at his face. He pauses in front of me, standing silently looking down at me. I look at my hands and swallow. Several minutes pass. I can feel my lips and chin trembling. But he walks on past me to his duffel bag and puts on some jeans. I can't believe it. He continues on toward the kitchen. I'm making us something to eat, he says coldly. I sit there, a bundle of nerves. I hear sounds rattling from the kitchen. A pan slammed down, a refrigerator door slammed and reopened. I hear his voice. How do you like your eggs? He sounds less angry. Scrambled, I yell back, and then I think I'm losing my mind. Maybe I should ask him if he has any mushroom or spinach. No, I'm sure I'm crazy. There's food, he says loudly in a few minutes. I gather my courage, tighten the belt of my robe, and start to slowly limp into the kitchen.
Tense. Good dialogue. Do you enjoy writing dialogue?
I love writing dialogue. It's easy for me, although I always edit it. I can just see the conversation and hear it going on, and then I just record it.
That's great. And a lot of writers, that's a place that's difficult for them. It always feels stilted. It's fun to listen to, and so I felt that you had fun writing it, even though it's a very serious situation. So I wanted to tell listeners that you can read more about Nancy's books at her website, nancyleonard.net, and Leonard is spelled L-E-O-N-A-R-D. So that's nancyleonard.net, and she's got a very nice website with excerpts and information about how the series moves along. I found there that you call it the Relentless River series. So tell us a little bit about that title for your series.
Well, I had a horrible time trying to name the series. And in fact, the first book went through six or seven various titles. Nothing seemed right. And finally, the metaphor of the river as being life, flowing on, being constantly modified by inflowing streams, It just seemed appropriate. Plus, the area that I specifically write about is on a beautiful river on the Blackfeet Reservation called Two Medicine River. It's in my mind, the background, back of my mind, all through these books. And so the Relentless River series came about. And then I thought, what's the beginning of a river? The headwaters. So and that's how the original title right. came.
And that, what are the other titles in the series?
Headwaters is the first book, and Becomes a Horseman is the second book. Those are the two that are out. The third book is going to be called The Earth's Backbone, and that's what the Blackfeet call the Rocky Mountains. Mm-hmm. And it's also a book about two cultures trying to get along, to understand each other. The fourth book is Cast No Shadow. The fifth book I'm not sure of, but Scent of Ozone is a possibility. The sixth one, All My Brothers. The seventh, Lost in My Mind. The eighth one is What If You're Wrong? It has to do with wildland firefighting and people who make decisions, and if they're wrong, it can go very badly.
Wow, they're all very interesting titles. Do you have any kind of timeline on the third one that'll become available?
Funny you should ask. I've been talking to my direct agent. It looks like it's going to be early fall.
That's getting there. That's close.
Yeah. I'd love to put out one book every 9 months. That seems reasonable to me. And it has taken longer this time because I had to find a new publisher and then they had to start over. And this particular publisher is taking it another level from the previous publisher. They're going to re-edit the book themselves several times. They want their influence on the product. I know they love the book, so I don't think it's going to be a lot of significant editing. But this might be interesting to people who are listening. By the time a book goes from the first draft to the time it comes out, if you're working with a significant publishing company and you yourself are very dedicated to quality, the book usually goes through about 10 to 12 edits. They go back and forth.
And you as the author see each edit.
Oh, yes. I will edit it myself at least twice before it goes to the publisher, and then it'll go back and forth with them. You start with large structural issues, like I had one editor, and I have my own personal editor that I use even before it goes to a publisher. And she basically said, you're taking the easy way out on the start. Let's make it more interesting. Let's do it this way. And they don't tell you how to do that. They just say things like that. So that's a large structural effort. And then it goes down a level on inconsistencies and things like that. And then you finally get down to paragraph flow and word choice, and then finally proofing. And each time you go back and forth and edit it in between. So it's an amazingly involved process.
But you said you like it.
I love it. Everything that makes the book better. Luckily, I have the kind of personality. When you have an author and an editor, the author ultimately has the last word. But usually, I would say in 98% of the time, if you have an editor that you trust, I will go with them. If it's 50-50, I'll say, okay, no, I like that. Once in a while, I'll argue if I think it's important or they don't know something about a future plot line that's important. But no, editors are invaluable.
I agree with you. I've learned a lot. I've become a better writer because of editors.
Yeah. Incredible.
Does 8 complete the series?
No. I've completed it on book, 4. I was sure that was it. And then I completed it again at book 7. There are incredible stories to be told. And I bring back some of the older characters all the time. So if you love a character in book 2, that character, I can just guarantee, will pop up later in the book. Occasionally, I will kill off a character. But I don't want to say too much about that. But in general, my beloved characters go on. And sometimes they come back in a more important role. Like almost as a protagonist again. But I'm actually 2/3 of the way through the 9th book.
This is a very exciting venture that you hatched an idea that made you sit down and write. And you said you sort of woke up and had 2/3 of the book written.
Yes.
And it's created a matrix for you of many, many stories that take place involving trains, I think you said, and you needed tracks for...
Well, like flying lessons. That's a whole nother thing.
Well, we have a minute. Tell us. You're right. Your bio said you've taken up flying lessons.
Well, my husband was a medevac pilot in Vietnam. And I have a character in the seventh book that I've told him, and he's really kind of excited about it. He's read my part. That's really based on his character. His personality and flaws and strong points. I needed information. And so I started taking lessons out at the airport, and it's been one of the main joys. I can't believe it. When that book comes out, I am really proud of the job that I did becoming a pilot because that point of view is in there.
So your imagination feeds the writing, and then the writing feeds you. And so it's a whole process of self-growth and exploration going on.
It's an absolute gift.
Yeah. This has been exciting to talk with you. It'd be fun to watch your website and see the books appearing. Thank you so much for your stories about that part of writing we don't hear about too much, what goes on after we finish what we think is a finished book.
Thank you, Sheila. It was really, really fun.
Thank you.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman.